Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
It's not your business. We need to be cautious about this. You know, not everything going on around you is your business. Not all the little dramas, not all the little things going on in lives around, it's not all your business. Now, maybe some of it is. Maybe prayerfully you need to consider and seek the Lord and figure out what's your business, but you know that all of it isn't your business. We have that tendency, don't we? Or at least some of us do. Just this tendency to meddle with trouble so that we fall.
Sometimes we get entangled in situations that we never should have been involved with in the first place. Today, Pastor David warns us against thinking that because we're Christians, we need to try to solve every conflict we encounter. He gives the example of King Amaziah, who decided it was time he showed Jehoash who was boss. It ended badly for Amaziah. If we let pride move us out of our own sphere of responsibility and try to take on things that are not our responsibility, we could fall flat on our face. Now, here's Pastor David with today's edition of Enduring Word.
Amaziah said, I'm not going to be ruled by the way people do things in this world. I'm going to be ruled by the Word of God. Verse 7 gives us another commendable thing about Amaziah. It says, he killed 10,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt and took Selah by war and called its name Jokthiel to this day. So this shows us the military might of Amaziah and how he successfully subdued the weaker nations surrounding Judah. It tells us that he took this city, Selah, by war. Now, some scholars believe that this is the ancient rock city in the desert, also known as Petra. Other people believe it was a different place. One way or another, this was a very significant victory from Amaziah. I have to tell you something, though, and this is sort of interesting when you compare 2 Kings with 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles will give you various information bits that we didn't have in 2 Kings. And so if you read 2 Chronicles chapter 25, it gives more background to this very event. It tells us that Amaziah gathered together a huge army in Judah to go against Edom. He gathered together, and I'm quoting now, 300,000 choice men able to go to war who could handle the spear and shield. That's a pretty good army, right? But he also hired 100,000 mercenary soldiers from the northern kingdom of Israel. But a prophet came to him and warned him not to use the mercenary soldiers from Israel because God was not with that rebellious and idolatrous kingdom. Amaziah was convinced, I'm going to trust God, and he sent the mercenaries from Israel away. He even paid them what he said he was going to pay them. He just accepted the loss of the money as a step of obedience to God. And God blessed that step of faith, and he gave them a very convincing victory over the Edomites. Now, that was courageous. You know, he had his plan, he had his way, but the prophet of God came and told him what to do, and he sent away the mercenary soldiers, and he relied just on the people in his own kingdom, and God did a great work. However, 2 Chronicles also tells us this, that Amaziah trusted God for the victory over Edom, but immediately after that victory over the Edomites, his heart turned from God. Let me read to you from 2 Chronicles chapter 25, verse 14. Now it was so, after Amaziah came from the slaughter of the Edomites, that he brought the gods of the people of Seir, set them up to be his gods, and bowed down before them and burned incense to them. Whoa! Now that is bad, because it's ingratitude. God gave you a great deliverance, and what are you doing? You're turning your heart from him in pride as soon as God gives you that great deliverance. So that makes verse 8 and following make much more sense. Look at it here, beginning of verse 8. Then Amaziah sent messengers to Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, come, let us face one another in battle. So now do you understand why he did that? He just came out of this victorious battle against the Edomites. His head is filled with the pride of victory, and his heart is filled with the worship of other gods. Anyway, going on, and Jehoash, the king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, king of Judah, saying, the thistle that was in Lebanon sent to the cedar that was in Lebanon, saying, give your daughter to my son as wife. And a wild beast that was in Lebanon passed by and trampled the thistle. You have indeed defeated Edom, and your heart has lifted you up. Glory in that, and stay at home. For why should you meddle with trouble so that you fall, you and Judah with you? But Amaziah would not heed. Therefore Jehoahash, king of Israel, went out. And he and Amaziah, king of Judah, faced one another at Beth Shemesh, which belongs to Judah. And Judah was defeated by Israel, and every man fled to his tent. You can just picture this in your mind, can't you? The arrogant Amaziah, king of Judah, saying, man, I defeated the Edomites. God is with me. I'm going to go up and do something against those Israelites too. And the king of Israel, who is not a godly man, says, young man, why don't you settle down a little bit? I love the illustration. He says, the thistle that was in Lebanon sent to the cedar that was in Lebanon, saying, give your daughter to my son as the wife. And you understand what he's saying here, right? I'm the cedar, you're the thistle. I'm the big sturdy tree, you're just a sharp thorny plant. Don't have an overly high estimation of yourself. But he wouldn't listen. Instead, he said, come, let us face one another in battle. Again, I have to refer you to 2 Chronicles chapter 5 for more background to this event. When Amaziah sent away the Israelite mercenaries, they weren't happy, even though he paid them for not fighting. Now, that's a pretty good deal, right? You get paid for not fighting. But they probably counted on receiving much more in spoil from the war. And so as they returned to Israel, they raided some of the cities of Judah on the way back. And that was the political motivation for Amaziah's attack against Israel. And I'll tell you, he had every reason to believe that he would be successful. He recently assembled a 300,000-man army that killed 20,000 Edomites in a victory over Edom. And Jehoahaz seemed very weak. Do you remember when we read just last chapter that in Israel they only had 50 horsemen, 10 chariots, and 10,000 foot soldiers? That was at this very time. So the king of Judah said, man, this is easy. I'll walk all over these guys. But the king of Israel warned him. He said, listen, don't do it. I'm like the cedar. You're like the thistle. Don't imagine yourself as my equal. And then he said a great line there. He said, why should you meddle with trouble so that you fall, you and Judah with you? Amaziah should have listened to this word from Jehoash, but he didn't. He provoked a fight he should have avoided. He wasn't considering things from a godly perspective. So what was the result of it? Look at it here in verse 13. Then Jehoash, king of Israel, captured Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Jehoash, the son of Ahaziah, at Beth Shemesh, and he went to Jerusalem and broke down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits. And he took all the gold and silver, all the articles that were found in the house of the Lord and in the treasuries of the king's house and hostages, and returned to Samaria. Wow! I just want you to think about this for a minute. These are all sons of Israel. These are the 10 northern tribes attacking the 2 southern tribes and stealing things from the temple. You see, because of his foolish attack against Israel, Amaziah lost his freedom for a time, and he became a prisoner of the king of Israel. But not only that, he also saw the defenses of Jerusalem broken down when the king of Israel came and he broke down the walls of Jerusalem. And then finally, he lost the treasures of the people of God because he took all the gold and silver from the temple of God. Even hostages that were taken from Jerusalem to Samaria. I want you to think about this. The decision to attack the northern kingdom of Israel was the decision of one man alone. But yet all of God's people had to pay a great price for it. It was really true what he should have listened to from the mouth of the king of the northern tribes, King Jehoash. He should have listened to that word. Why do you meddle with trouble so that you fall? Listen, this is a good instruction for us in our Christian life. We can get into a tremendous amount of trouble just by meddling in things that aren't our business. You know, it's just, why are you getting involved in this trouble? It's not your business. We need to be cautious about this. You know, not everything going on around you is your business. Not all the little dramas, not all the little things going on in lives around, it's not all your business. Now, maybe some of it is. Maybe prayerfully you need to consider and seek the Lord and figure out what's your business, but you know that all of it isn't your business. But we have that tendency, don't we? Or at least some of us do. Just this tendency to meddle with trouble so that we fall. Well, certainly this was the case of Amaziah. Look at how it continues here in verse 15. It says, "Now the rest of the acts of Jehoash, which he did, his might, and how he fought with Amaziah, king of Israel, are they not written in the books of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel?" So Jehoash rested with his fathers and was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel. Then Jeroboam, his son, reigned in his place. Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived 15 years after the death of Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel. Now the rest of the acts of Amaziah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And they formed a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem. And he fled to Lachish, but they sent after him to Lachish and killed him there. Then they brought him on horses, and he was buried at Jerusalem with his fathers in the city of David. And all the people of Judah took Azariah, who was 16 years old, and made him king instead of his father, Amaziah. He built Eloth and restored it to Judah after the king rested with his fathers. No doubt it was the embarrassing loss against the northern kingdom of Israel that made people within the government, within the kingdom of Amaziah, raise up and say, this man is not competent to serve as our king. And they had a little revolution and they took him from the throne. It wasn't a complete revolution because they put his son back up on the throne. By the way, should we just remind ourselves of how remarkable that is? You assassinate the king, but you put his son on the throne. Isn't that strange? Now, you know why it happened that way? Not because these were guys who said, well, we must do it, but because God's hand was overruling all things and God had made a promise. Who did he make the promise to? To Amaziah? No, he made the promise to David. And he said, your royal line will always sit over Judah. And so even very strange instances like this, because let me tell you, in the world back then and even today, it just doesn't work that way. Let's execute the king and put his son on the throne. No, how do you do it? Let's execute the king and all of his potential heirs. We'll put our own guy on the throne. That's how it happened time and again in the northern kingdom of Israel, but not in the southern kingdom. It always stayed with the royal line of David. Well, in any way, when they made this plot against him, it says that he fled to Lachish, but they sent after him to Lachish and killed him. They assassinated him, just like his father was assassinated as well. And it says, and the people of Judah took Azariah, who was 16 years old, and they made him king instead of his father. Now, Azariah also has another name. He's also known by a variant name known as Uzziah. And he turns out to be one of the greatest kings of Judah after David, Uzziah. By the way, who was king at the same time for some of the ministry of Isaiah. Do you remember that great passage in the book of Isaiah? In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. And then he goes on. Well, we'll talk more about Uzziah in future chapters, because here at verse 23, we transition back up to the northern kingdom of Israel, and we consider the successor of Joash. His name was Jeroboam II. But I just want you to consider here that here we have two kings in a row in Judah who are both assassinated, who essentially were good men, but made critical mistakes. And then now the third, Uzziah, who's going to be raised up, and we'll read more about him in future studies. But here now, verse 23. In the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, became king in Samaria, and he reigned 41 years. Now again, it says Jeroboam, but don't let it confuse you. This is not the same Jeroboam who initiated the civil war between the 10 northern tribes and the 2 southern tribes. This is sometimes called in books and such, Jeroboam II. It says here, going on, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, he was the first Jeroboam, who had made Israel sin. He restored the territory of Israel from the entrance of Hamath to the Sea of the Arba, according to the word of the Lord God of Israel, which he had spoken through his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet who was from Gath-Hepher. For the Lord saw that the affliction of Israel was very bitter, and whether bond or free, there was no helper for Israel. And the Lord did not say that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. I just want you to look at this and think over it. Chew over this for a minute. Jeroboam II was a wicked king who continued the politically motivated idolatry of his namesake, Jeroboam I, also known as Jeroboam the son of Nebat. And during his reign, the prophets Jonah and Amos spoke boldly for God. Read the book of Amos and tell me if Israel was a godly nation during this time. It was not. But nevertheless, in a strange way, his reign was blessed. Did you see it? It says it right there. It says, he restored the territory of Israel, for the Lord saw that the affliction of Israel was very bitter. Out of great mercy, God showed kindness to a disobedient Israel ruled by an evil king. I gotta say, this is amazing. Doesn't it seem to you that in some way, God is almost being more gracious to the northern kingdom of Israel than he's being to the southern kingdom of Judah? Well, why would that be? I'll tell you why. Because the southern kingdom of Judah was closer to him. The Bible tells us that judgment begins at the house of God, and that God will deal with his own children sometimes more strictly then he'll deal with non-believers. Why? Because they're his kids. Now listen, if I see somebody else's children misbehaving, I'm not going to go correct them. I mean, I suppose I might if they're getting really out of control. But just normal disobedience, it's like, listen, they're not my kids. They've got their own thing to do. But when I see my own children misbehaving, I feel a greater responsibility to correct them. If it seems to you that God is almost being more strict with the southern kingdom of Judah than with the northern kingdom of Israel, I think you're right. He is. Now, it's interesting here that this prophet Jonah spoke to them during these days. It says, according to the word of the Lord God of Israel, which he had spoke through his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet. It's almost certainly the same Jonah who was famous for his missionary trip to Nineveh. And apparently he had a very strong ministry among his own people, not only the people of Nineveh. So here, concluding the chapter, we have the last couple verses summarizing the reign of Jeroboam II. It says, now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam and all that he did, his might, how he made war, and how he recaptured for Israel from Damascus and Hamath what had belonged to Judah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Jeroboam rested with his fathers, the kings of Israel. Then Zechariah, his son, reigned in his place. Isn't that interesting? I'll tell you what's interesting about it. What a prosperous and seemingly blessed reign that Jeroboam II had. Did you read it there? His might, how he made war, how he recaptured for Israel from Damascus and Hamath what had belonged to Judah. The reign of Jeroboam II was a time of economic and political and material prosperity for Israel. Yet it wasn't because of their own merit or goodness, but because of God's great mercy to Israel. That's interesting. When you study archaeology, you see that archaeology confirms the economic might of Jeroboam II. In the age prior to Jeroboam II, the houses in Israel's cities were roughly the same size. But archaeologists find a change starting in the 8th century BC in ancient cities like Tisra. They have a neighborhood of large, expensive houses and another neighborhood of small, crowded structures, smaller than the houses from previous years. The larger houses are filled with the marks of prosperity. And the oppressive rich of Israel thought that they could be safe there. But God's judgment came against the large houses as well, as is recorded in the prophecies of Amos, especially Amos chapter 3. And you know what I find very remarkable about this? Is that there was great prosperity, security, outward signs of blessing here on the reign of Jeroboam II. But it was all empty. He wasn't right with God. All right, here's the consideration for this evening. Don't we have the tendency in ourselves to think, man, I'm blessed, I'm happy, things are going good. I must be right with God. And don't we have the tendency with ourselves or maybe with other people, you look at somebody else who's afflicted, who's really going through it, and you say, man, I hope they get it right with the Lord. You know, they should come up to the place where I'm at. I just want to remind you that it's not always that simple, is it? It's not always so simple to say, oh man, everything's great. There's money in the bank and there's security in the home and everything's good. I must be right with God. Maybe not. You could write that over Jeroboam II's reign. Don't let that deceive you. Don't let contentedness in your outward circumstances deceive you into thinking that therefore you're right with God. Then again, don't let trouble make you think automatically that you're not right with God. You can be in the center of God's will and be in a lot of trouble and difficulty. Then again, you can be very far out of God's will and have a lot of outward blessing and prosperity. You know, sometimes I think the devil is happy to send a comfortable, prosperous life to us if it'll help us send us on our way to hell. Or at least in hardness of heart against God or ineffective Christian life. Now look, I'm not here to say, you're happy and blessed, therefore you're not right with God. Nobody's ever going to say that. But what I am going to say is don't let your outward circumstances automatically measure where you're at with the Lord. You know how you need to measure where you're at with the Lord? Get down on your knees, ask God to search your heart, and do an honest inventory of the fruit of the Spirit in your life. Now, I'm not talking about the things you have. I'm not talking about the ease of life around you. I'm talking about the genuine fruit of God's Spirit in your life. Is it evident? Is it evident in the eyes of other people? Maybe you can see the fruit, but you must be keeping it in your pocket because nobody else can see it. It should be out evident for everybody to see. I'm just really struck by this idea, by the seemingly evil yet blessed reign of Jeroboam II. But the other thing it shows us that we serve a God of great mercy, right? I mean, let's face it. He doesn't deal with us as we deserve. Maybe some people would get offended at this, at the way God dealt with Jeroboam II, and they sort of stamp their feet a little bit. Say, Lord, why are you blessing him? He's not right with you. And listen, this happens, right? It doesn't just happen back in the days of Jeroboam II. Many people today have asked the same question. Lord, why are you blessing that man? He's not right with you. He's not as godly as I am. Well, why are you blessing him? And if you listen very carefully at those moments, you can hear the voice of God whispering to you. Maybe he'll shout. I don't know. But he'll say something to you along these lines. He'll say, do you really want me to start treating you as you deserve? If that's what you want, the God says, I can do that. If you want me to start treating I'll treat this man as he deserves, and I'll treat you as you deserve. Is that how you want it? No, Lord. Treat me with grace, but him with justice. No, God says, no, thank you. No, thank you. My grace is free. My mercy is rich. And I give it or withhold it based on my own wisdom, based on my own knowledge. We have to be at peace with that. And we have to not be satisfied with an easy, blessed life telling us that we're necessarily close to the Lord.
As we are making our way through the books of 1st and 2nd Kings, King Solomon is certainly taking center stage, and his crowning achievement was the building of God's holy temple. This magnificent structure is like nothing that has ever been built on the face of the earth. And while Solomon is the most prominent of the kings in the books of 1st and 2nd Kings, there are many others highlighted in these books. Some of these kings followed after God, while others led the people into some of the most depraved and wicked times the nation of Israel has ever seen. God used Elijah and Elisha to attempt to call the people back to himself. Each day, Pastor David will share insights from these books that will bring clarity to our own walk with Jesus. We hope you'll join us again here on Enduring Word with Pastor David Guzik. You can add today's message to your study library by simply giving us a call at 805-730-1400. Keep in mind, we need today's date to ensure you get the right teaching. Or send us an email. Our email address is radio@enduringword.com. That's radio@enduringword.com. And when you call or email to place an order, please let us know how God is using Enduring Word. It's always a great blessing to hear testimonies of God's work. Use the contact option at enduringword.com. At the website, you'll also find a number of Pastor David's messages for you to download for further study. Enduring Word is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara, in Santa Barbara, California. Join us next time, same place, for another edition of Enduring Word.